This is Timur Millington. Welcome to Trending. We are in studio today, and with me is second time this week, Chris Mueller.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
So tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm a youth minister. I've been doing Catholic youth ministry for the last 16 or 17 years. I've been at the same parish, St. Martha's in Murrieta, for 13. And God, over the years, has called me more and more into kind of a national speaking ministry, doing camps and conferences all over the country. You can check me out at chrismueller.co. Go to .co because .com is not me. He's a photographer, and he doesn't like getting my email, oddly enough. Yeah, it's not super excited about that.
You mean he doesn't want to talk about our Lord?
Not in a nice way. No. That actually happened to people.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, welcome. He is our guest this week on Trending. Super excited to have you. We'll have to bring you back again sometime
soon.
Yeah,
love to come in. Yeah,
in the meantime, really just aggravating thing happened to me a couple months ago when I was sitting there in the movie theater, ran out to the restroom, walking back to the movie, and there's this sign for a remake of a movie that I personally just love, Ocean's 11. But this time, it's something like an Ocean's 7, and it's all women.
Really?
And I just, thoughts are, you're ruining the movie.
Ocean's was a remake of a movie, and it was a Frank Sinatra remake, right? It was made, anyway. Yeah, why are we doing that?
Why?
I don't know what this thing is where we're having to go through and rewrite stories that were male-focused as female-focused, whether that's Ghostbusters or Oceans or whatever. I don't know. It seems like it's happening more and more. And I think part of it is, A, we're just remaking everything right now. It's easier to sell a franchise that's already been established than create a new one, you know.
Well, here's one for you that I think a lot of people are just a little too disturbed by, and that is, forget James Bond, Jane Bond is the future.
Is that a thing? I have an issue with that. First off, James Bond as a man is maybe not the best example of manhood.
Right.
He's and this women's empowerment movement of saying, well, a woman can do any role that a man can do. We're going to do James Bond as a woman. I just think, well, why not lift up women? Why are we making these movies about that were male characters? Now, obviously, Ian Fleming's wrote this James Bond character. He developed it, and then of course it's been developed more and more in film and kind of created its own thing. Why doesn't somebody write a great story about a woman, like about a female spy, about and really build that on the strengths of women, rather than just saying, oh, well, we're just going to do, you know, a rehash. We're going to change it. We're just going to do that. And I think that is the safe thing. It's like why we have how many flavors of Skittles, right? Because you can sell another flavor of Skittles, even if they're disgusting, easier than you can do and just form a new candy.
Absolutely. Well, and what's interesting is I find that a lot of women are even somewhat frustrated by this. I think in general, we're just so tired of everything having to be turned into the woman is a hero, the man is a loser, not worth, you know, really hearing his opinion. He's, you know, the guy on the couch that doesn't have any say in what's happening in the family. Like, it's not just that now it's a female lead, but it's now that we're going to bash on the men. The men are going to be the ones who are, like, kind of doing the stupid thing, not really changing things. Like, I remember in the latest Star Wars movie,
right,
we were talking about this, and it's like, again, females only are the heroes. All the men, you know, might do the right thing in the end, but they're the ones who are kind of out of control, not helping.
Yeah, there was not one admirable male character in the new Star Wars. And my son and I actually had a conversation about this, you know, gosh, Luke Skywalker even was just the ultimate coward, really, you know? Why is that? Why? Again, I value the women in my life. My wife and I, when we were dating, we got into an argument, and I said something stupid to the effect of, well, this is just who I am, and so if you don't like it, then that's just the way it is. To which she then just promptly left. Like, she just walked out. And I actually literally had to jump in front of a moving car. And I knew in that moment, this is a woman I could marry, right? Because she's never going to let me walk all over her. She's going to have the strength I want my kids to have. And I think femininity, like, there is a strength in womanhood. Absolutely. And we need that, right? We need to raise that up. But we don't need to diminish masculinity to do that. I think we need to then raise up an authentic masculinity to complement that.
Absolutely. And I think that that's where the constant issue is there are no examples in the media today of authentic masculinity, of virtuous manhood. I mean, I think that it is something that is just constantly criticized. You hear words like toxic masculinity. Well, what do young boys today think when they hear that it is toxic to be a man?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we need good examples of masculinity. You know, and you look at film and television, and we used to hold up ideals, right? You look at that kind of idealized, and people go, oh well, you know, it was all rosy, and it was this unrealistic life, and no one could live up to that. But it gave people something to live up to. Whereas now, I think all of our films really don't. There's no idealism. There's no, you know, there were no. I would much rather have the culture put forward an ideal that people strive to live up to, even though they may not be able to, than to constantly pump out sewage that you know anybody can do, but no one's going to be happy doing. And I think that's what we're getting. So yeah, we need an authentic masculinity presented rather than just saying masculinity is toxic.
Well, talking about authentic masculinity, I think a challenge for authentic masculinity is that women are, you know, tooting their horns to this chant of "I can do anything." You can do better, right? You
right.
have this of everyone
right.
was saying that, even young girls today. You know, Chris, you travel around speaking to youth all the time, as do I. And, you know, you bring up feminism to 12-year-old girls, and they're fully attentive all of a sudden. Like, they're willing to listen to anything you say. And that's where we have to help them see that to be a feminist, since that is what they want, is to be a woman. And in that, you respect the fact that men are called to be men. And
yeah.
with that, you have to help them see that complementarity that the church is constantly talking about. And in fact, psychology is just continuing to show is fundamental to the development of the human person.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly it. It's the complementarity, which is a fun word to say. We've lost that concept.
Right.
You know, we've taken the idea of, you know, you look at just sexuality and the complementarity of sexuality. And we've now said that's not integral. That's not necessary. You don't need a male and a female. And gender isn't even really a thing. It's just a construct. And it's just decimating to young people. It's decimating to adult people. It just doesn't work. It's so blatantly, obviously doesn't work, but we're committed to an ideology, not reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is one of the things I love, that as there has been this like fire on marriage and family, on what it is to be male and female, the Catholic Church in her wisdom has invited a deeper discussion of femininity and masculinity. And one of the things that I've seen come out of this is, well, let's look at, it's not just Catholics, it's not just Christians who are saying men and women are different and marriage isn't just some social construct, it's fundamental to being a person, and that is seen in every single culture and religion.
Right.
There's some form of an institution of marriage and family. Is it always, you know, done exactly the same? No, but you need man, woman in order to make a baby. And generally speaking, that baby is dependent on the mother and father that essentially brought them into this world and has the greatest invested interest in that person, right? In that new person. So with that, Chris, you see, like, the study of Hinduism, Buddhism, you see the study of, you know, our Jewish forefathers before us. You see the study of all of these different cultures, and they describe male and female as, you know, the yin and the yang of two halves of a whole, of, you know, this balance between two colors. Like, they describe this, and the whole time they're describing marriage in the co-complement, the working together of a man and a woman, and the necessity in the way we think, the way we interact, the way we care for others, the way we see, like, men have this awesome strength to see systems,
right.
And men work according to systems. Women have the strength to see the person. And how I was just talking to a friend who said, I want to be married. And part of that is because I see now, after, you know, like, really looking at what marriage is, that marriage is hard, and it's when I come home that I am now working hard, not when I'm at work. I don't go home to rest. And I love that he said that, because for a man to go to work is a system. He can do that. There's a comfort
right.
there. But to go home, he suddenly has to see the person before him.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's funny. My wife, we have 6 kids. We just brought a baby home, and there's just a lot going on. My wife was talking about some of the things that were frustrating her. You know, and this is just kids not picking up the house or doing this or doing that, you know, that kind of stuff. And I had to say to her, well, I need you, I will help. I will make them do it. I will mobilize the troops, but I need you to write down the things that you're seeing that are bothering you, because I honestly don't see them, right? I just don't see the world the same way. And that doesn't mean that she's wrong or I'm right, or that just means that, that there's a natural complementation there. Like, I need her to help me see those things because I'm just not going to see them. And on the other hand, she maybe needs me to kind of help to not see those things at times too. You know, we balance each other out.
Yeah. And you see that that's the teamwork of a family.
Absolutely.
Like, why is it that we can be so pro diversity in the workforce?
Right.
Pro needing a man and woman, needing this specific technical skill, needing this people person. Why is it that we're okay with that? But when it comes down to basic psychology, basic neuroscience, a basic study of the family, that we're willing to say, oh, one of those isn't that important for the other, or it's not important for the development of a child.
Right. And you look at, you know, okay, so what you look at the statistics on incarceration and fatherlessness is just bam, right there. You know what I mean? And we mentioned that in a previous show, but like, it's obviously blatantly necessary, but we deny it in the name of an ideology that is unproven and unscientific, quite frankly.
Absolutely. Well, this is Trending. You are listening to Chris Mueller. This is Timray Millington. I'm so excited to have you in studio, Chris. Anyone wants to check out Chris's information and his speaking? And you just started a podcast for men specifically recently.
Yeah, we're just in the beginning stages of getting this out. It's called the Catholic Dad Podcast. And it really is just a conversation about what it is to be a man or a dad. And it's just support. It's me looking for brothers and bringing brotherhood.
You can check that out at chrismueller.co, and be sure to check out the other show we did, because we talked a lot about masculinity, male friendship, themes that I think are so important and they're often lost in the culture today. So check out Trending online. You can see us at timmery.com. We will be right back. Welcome back to Trending. This is your host, Timray Millington. I am super happy today to present to you our guest this week in studio, Chris Mueller. He's here with us for two shows, and you can find a little more about him at chrismueller.co. We've been talking about just some of the challenges that we're seeing right now with female James Bond. And now, like, just looking at what's going on, it's no surprise that as we're so pro-woman, we're like, we now need to replace James Bond with a female version, that some people are kind of upset because Walmart is now covering up Cosmo Girl magazine. Like, we're so pro-woman that anything goes with women. Doesn't matter if it's filtered or unfiltered.
Yeah, you know, Cosmo. So, yeah, again, I have young children, and it is, it shouldn't be an avert your eyes situation every time you need to buy milk, you know, like I shouldn't have to explain to my kids what these words mean describing the intimate relations between a man and a woman. Like, I shouldn't have to introduce that to my third grader who reads everything. I should be able to buy my milk without being confronted with that. And I don't know why anyone would not get that. Like, why don't you get that that's just not appropriate for the consumption of children?
Right. And so now, you know, the fact that with pornography magazines, they usually have blockers put in the way so that, you know, a kid can't just see that and read it. Now, Walmart is joining in a number of other companies who have decided to really initiate the fact that there is certain content, not just in images, but language, like you're saying, that kids are really impacted by.
Oh, absolutely. I love that we're veiling the sacred again on the shelf of Cosmo. But really, that's what we're talking about. When we talk about the gift of human sexuality, we're talking about the sacred. We're talking about something that belongs in the context of married life, that is sacramental. It should be veiled. It should be protected. That should be something that we cherish and uphold, not because it's dirty or because it's wrong, but because the context of it is not the supermarket checkout. Right? Like, that just isn't the context. And if someone in line in front of you at the supermarket checkout was graphically talking about their sex life, you would be horrified, mortified, and hopefully you would say, you know, they're kids here. That's not something you should be talking about. But then we've got it passively sitting right there with a half-naked person right next to it and a body image that isn't even real because it's been airbrushed anyway, and we're supposed to be okay with that now.
And no one's willing to say anything in general. And I think that this is an issue across the board. You have workplace where we are expected to have this 100% attitude of tolerance. You
right.
have, you know, these sexual education programs in school that parents are like, I'm really uncomfortable with, but that's what it is. So they just send their kids anyways. And maybe they do, maybe they don't talk about sex outside of school. But it's just this fact that we have become so apathetic.
Right.
You know, Chris, my brother, I was home last week, 17, he's in high school, and he was asked to give a presentation at the diocese to a bunch of the religious educators, the priests, and on what, like, the challenges and what they can work on as religious today. And I asked him, you know, what did you say the challenge was today? And he said, to be frank, it was that, you know, I'm enthusiastic about my faith, but there isn't anyone else who is in my peer group. And it made me think about how we have become so silent on issues of faith and morality to the point that children do not care today. And now it is so greatly impacting people who do want to care.
Yeah. You know, I think we got a couple things going on, you know, with that. You know, it's one, for instance, faith and morals, right? It's sort of, we're in this weird situation where if you say the things that are on a Cosmo cover at work, you're going to be somebody's Me Too story, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you speak out against them, then you are this intolerant, horrible, terrible person.
Right.
Right. So where you go. But then you also have this reality of, for our young people, you know, you look at kind of the cultural shifts in the generations. Most of our, most young people are in a position with the faith, unfortunately, where they're like a third generation immigrant, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic faith was absolutely their grandparents. Their parents mm-hmm. kept doing it because it was kind of the tradition. And now they're living in a different world and it's not part of them because mm-hmm. the practice maybe was there.
Yeah.
But for some reason, the relationship with God wasn't passed down. The knowledge of it wasn't. And they got sucked into the secular culture of the United States. They got indoctrinated by television and school and whatever. And so now it's the same affection I have for my grandparents, you know, home country of Italy. I have an affection for Italy. I don't want to live there, but I know that, and there's a pride of that heritage, but I'm not Italian. And I think a lot of young people, my parents were Catholic, but I'm not because it's become a cultural kind of migration.
There was a piece that came out a couple of weeks ago that I saw being reposted all over social media, and it was about how Catholics don't evangelize. And when, you know, basically different denominations were asked about why they don't evangelize, Catholics responded as to whether or not they should evangelize. Only 3%
yeah.
said that they should. And one of the big reasons in the article it was talking about was because this cultural Catholicism in we see it, you know, you see it with Italians, you see it with the Irish, you see it with the Lebanese, you see it with the Germans. Like, it's so common. It's just something we do. And of course, down the road, you get your kids baptized. Like, that matters because it's a part of your culture, but it doesn't matter because you are taking this child and bringing the child into the family of God, washing the child of its original sin. Like, that part doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it's, you know, as a church, are we really, really, teaching that you bring that child to be baptized and you take the role of Saint Joseph in that child's life? Like, you're no longer the primary, like, the father is the father and you're a steward of that child. Mm-hmm. Your role is to get that child back to their father.
Right.
And I don't think we miss that. And we don't really instruct on how we do that, you know?
Right. Well, and I love that you think about it, you know, the proper language for St. Joseph will be that he is the legal father. If you look at the context, he wasn't the foster father. He was the legal father of Jesus. And with that, you have a responsibility legally according to the law of how you are to bring that child up, not just in the eyes of the law, but inside the laws of the faith.
Yeah.
You know, and I keep thinking about the Maccabee brothers right now because I'm rereading 1st and 2nd Maccabees. And like, what is fundamental to these men, to these warriors, is that they're able to worship in Jerusalem. The respect for the temple, right, is fundamental, but also to preserve the law, to be able to
right.
live out their faith. And, you know, I think about that, and you have people who are just so indifferent today. I mean, to the point that I think that a lot of people are going to hear this and just totally shut down. But people say, oh, it's Cosmo, it's a magazine that girls love, you know, just like 17 and some of the others. But get this, even the executive editor recently said, I have no time for a debate. Her last name's Coles. Coles said, I'm too busy putting out a magazine and encouraging American women to have more and better orgasms. End yeah. quote.
Yeah, you know, it's we're in such a hyper-sexualized society that there's no concept of love without sex, and there's no concept of the person without sex. Mm-hmm. And that's not even gender. That's like the act of sex, right? Mm-hmm. I was speaking to a group up in LA, that kind of area, and I'm talking to these young people, and they'd ask that question about marriage, you know, and I said, well, the church teaches chastity for every stage of life. Mm-hmm. As a married person, chastity means X. As a single person, chastity means sex. As a person with same-sex attraction, chastity means sex. And it was like horror. Like they'll never be able to have sex. And it's like, but that's not, sex isn't love, right? Mm-hmm. It should be in the context of love, but that doesn't mean you don't have love. It doesn't mean you don't have relationships. You don't have meaningful friendships. It doesn't mean you don't have life's fulfillment. It is not the end goal of everything we are. And I think that's what we teach, that it is.
And that's what we reduce it to. And that's what's so sad is like, you are constantly seeking out pleasure in life and not seeking out authentic friendship, authentic love. And people say, well, are you trying to say that someone with same-sex attraction can't show authentic love, or that two people living together outside of marriage can't show authentic love? That's not what I'm saying. They can love each other, but love requires sacrifice. And it also requires sacrifice when it comes to how you do and don't engage sexually. Like, that's just fundamental. Look at the stats on sexually transmitted diseases. They are off the charts today. We are seeing different forms of STDs that were only within the same-sex attracted community, or should I say the community that acted out on same-sex attraction, that's now in the heterosexual community. I mean, I was just watching The Crown recently. I don't watch stuff that has crap in it. Like, right. If there's sexual interaction, I don't watch it. Well, I was shocked by an episode of The Crown, because it's been a relatively very clean show. This second season, I know I'm way behind, but the second season, there's, you know, they're talking about Princess Margaret, and they end up sharing the story about her and her first marriage. And man, like, all of a sudden, there's a threesome right in front of Whoa. You on the screen. And like, Chris, it started with just two people together in this like artistic, and I'm like trying to skip past, and I skip really far past. I don't have to see anything. Yeah. Well, then boom, here's a threesome. And I'm just thinking, we've gotten to the point where this is normal to show. And that's right. Why we're talking about it.
You know, it's the frog in the pot. Like, one of the things that my wife and I decided, you know, 7 years ago, is we took cable out of our home, and we just mm-hmm. went to, you know, cord cutter, Netflix, and Amazon Prime. But what that's forced us to do is
cord cutter. Yeah. I don't even think half our audience would know what you meant there.
Oh, it's saying I'm not going to take the network in. Yeah. And for me, it's meant a really conscious choice of what we're going to watch and what we're not going to watch. Yeah. And so what we've done is we've stopped moving forward with the culture in some respects. And we've really gotten conscious to say, like, this is our strong line, that we're not going to watch the stuff that is a lifestyle we don't agree with.
Right. Yeah. You are listening to Trending. That is Chris Mueller joining us as a special guest on Trending this week. We're talking about Cosmo and just how Walmart is making the effort to cover up the explicit verbiage, not just the explicit images that are on the front of Cosmo, that it's pornography and it's impacting children. This is Tim Ray. You're listening to Trending. We will be right back. Listening, this is Timory Millington, and you are listening to Trending. If you would like to see a little bit about what we're talking about, maybe some of the articles, or share your thoughts, whether you're listening live on social media, on the radio, you can tweet me at Timory. In studio, I have a special guest this week, Chris Mueller. He can be found at chrismueller.co. He's a Catholic speaker, father of six children, newborn, well, just
About a month.
Congratulations. So one of the things I want to talk about that I think is such an awesome praise report right now is that here in the state of California, we just saw a major victory for Kathy Millers. Now, this isn't about whether or not someone can purchase a cake. What happened is so much more than that. Here is Kathy Miller. She was working in her cake shop here in California, and she was, you know, offering her services. A couple comes in wanting to buy a cake. She's willing to sell them any of the cakes already made here in the shop, but they wanted a custom-made cake with custom-made artistry promoting their same-sex union that they are about to enter into. And she won't make the cake. Well, there ends up being, you know, legal proceedings that take place. She begins to be punished for not baking this cake. And it wasn't the fact that she couldn't bake the cake. That's what people are saying. It was the fact that she was willing to make any cake for them, just not decorate it, celebrating something that went against her religion. Well, the awesome news, Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund, Charles Lamandry, who I actually worked for Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund for a while, they come out, and I want you guys to know about Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund, because they help people just like you to live and express your faith in any state of life, wherever you're working, whether it's a business, whether it's within a religious community, a nonprofit, that you can live up to the morality of your faith. And so they have taken on this case defending Kathy Miller. And here in the state of California, basically what ended up happening, Chris, awesome news. Basically, Kathy can make a cake for anyone she wants. And even the judge ruled she has the right to refuse to work on art that promotes something that her faith speaks out against. It didn't have to do with baking a cake. She was willing to bake a cake and serve anyone. And I think that that's why I have so much respect for this judge, is he said that's her First Amendment right to refuse to celebrate through art something that goes against her religion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important step, this injunction. I mean, and obviously it's preliminary. This thing has to still work itself through. I mean, they're still litigating it. But, shocker of shockers, it's California. You should have the right to exercise your art, but be able to decide what ideology or what morality you're going to be putting forward, right? As a Catholic, you should be able to say, I'm a Catholic. I don't believe that this same-sex marriage is a valid thing. I'm not going to advertise it. I'm not going to put signs up on my shop. You couldn't make me do that. Why would you then make me do my art in support of that, you know?
Absolutely. You're listening to Trending. That's Chris Mueller joining us in studio. I'm Timmarie Millington. Awesome sponsors of Trending are Radiant and Valiant Magazine. It's a magazine, one for women, one for men, published by Our Sunday Visitor. You can visit Our Sunday Visitor or go to radiant.osv.com to find more. For anyone watching live, I'm holding up the women's version of Radiant Magazine. I love that Radiant and Valiant are offered to people today, because they offer, you know, the exact opposite of what Cosmo is. People go to Cosmo often looking for something beautiful to read, to see, you know, beautiful women who are, you know, living strong lives of, you know, work and family. And that's just not something that they end up seeing. Instead, they end up facing low self-esteem. Instead, they end up reading stories and looking at pictures that aren't real, that are airbrushed and photoshopped, to the point that the original person, who probably wasn't even wearing makeup in the picture that they took, now has just been glamorized to the point that no one could possibly achieve that body shape, that face shape, or even that perfect makeup. So I just really want to put a plug for Radiant. And Valiant is a magazine that is so inspiring and full of adventure and inspiration for faith that I would strongly recommend. You know, Chris, one of the challenges that I see Canada has gone through before us is the complete indoctrination of young people when it comes to sexuality. Like, they, a long time ago, gave in and adopted a curriculum promoting gender ideology, promoting, you know, hormonal contraception, all of these elements. We're not that far behind them, but we can look to them as an example of how we should begin to speak up.
Yeah, it's interesting. Canada's story, you know, Ontario, where a lot of this is happening, their public school system, in their charter, it says they have to have state-funded Catholic schools. I mean, how cool is that? That any student in Canada's education system can choose to go to a Catholic, or pardon me, in Ontario's education system can choose to go to Catholic school. But how far have we traveled that now you have this sexual ideology that's saying that gender is just a construct, that's teaching dangerous sexual behaviors, and you know, I think the sad thing is the United States, we're following just after it. If you look at the statistics, what we can see is since this advent of widespread contraception, since really the advent of, let's just say destigmatized, sex outside of marriage, what we've seen is that hasn't reduced teenage pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It hasn't strengthened marriage. It hasn't, you know, the whole use a condom push of the 90s. Well, did STDs go down? No, they've exploded. So the ideology is proven to be detrimental to human health. And yet we're not stepping back and going, man, we really blew it. We're saying, no, double down even more. Just crush all of these traditional institutions. We're just having this huge, just this terrible effect on people's lives. But we're so married to this ideology that we're just going to keep going.
Right. And I think that what upsets me is that, I have to like jump on that last part, but even the condom mentality that we have promoted is so misleading. You know, I think kids don't realize any skin on skin contact within certain areas, like a condom doesn't protect you from all the skin to skin contact. It doesn't protect you from oral sex. Like warning, if you're listening in the car, I think you guys already know this, but if you have young ears, you know, as we're talking here, but I had a teenager just this last week, and I get this question all the time, like, why isn't the church okay with condoms? And there's a lot to it. You know, you're still not allowing for that fully unitive and fully open to life procreative element of every sexual act. You're not open. You're saying I'm closed off and I'm okay with reducing you to pleasure at this moment, and I'm not willing to refrain. But what happens is either way, kids who are having sex and still using condoms thinking, well, I'm safe, it's misleading. They don't recognize, again, the oral contact, the skin-to-skin contact is so harmful for them. There's a reason that in high school we were taught, hey, don't share straws with people because that's an exchange of fluid.
Right.
And if that's someone who's engaging in oral sex, you are at risk.
Well, and then you look at the chemical effects, like of just the effects when two people engage in intimate activity, the body produces hormones that are going to bond you. Why?
Yes.
Because the natural outcome is children. But you engage in that bonding and then that tearing apart and then that bonding and that tearing apart and that bonding and that tearing apart. And it's no guess that now divorce is just it's kind of like what we do because we've trained ourselves to break those natural bonds that the body is trying to do to create a stable home for kids.
And that chemical and emotional bond that is so fundamental to marriage, if you maintain that within marriage, what is being released in the body chemically and drawing us into a deeper emotional, physically chosen act is meant to help bond you permanently, to help you, even just some of the chemicals that are released are actually there to help you overlook the faults of your partner.
Absolutely.
You know,
I need that.
For you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No. God, thank you, Lord, for building that into the system. You anticipated me.
But like we talk about this and I see when I worked in the crisis pregnancy, women who would come in abusive relationships and people would say like, why don't you leave?
Yeah.
And I would always say, because she is chemically bonded to that man. It's like putting glasses on, deep, strong, strong, dark glasses on that prevent her from seeing some of his faults.
Right.
That's a good thing if you have tested and tried the relationship before you've hopped into bed and
right.
you have already seen that he is faithful, that the relationship will be fruitful. Like the reason the church talks about sexual intimacy as it does is because it is best for the human person.
Right. And you take that and you couple that with the neuroplasticity where, you know, these behavioral things become just response system. They, you know, it's the hardware changes so that she chemically bonds, you get that you're stuck. And now by putting up with that over and over again, you just begin to think that's normal. And so you naturally respond to like, if that's normal. And it takes therapy. It takes talk therapy. It takes that restructuring of the brain to say, no, this isn't good for me. And so, yeah, people get trapped in terrible situations and they literally cannot get out.
But I think that's what's so great. Like today we have so many incredible resources. You know, if you're addicted to pornography, porneffect.org is an awesome website.
Absolutely.
And, you know, a friend of ours, Matt Frad, who does incredible work. He talks about his own pornography addiction, about his own efforts to step out of that addiction and just obsession with sexual intimacy that prevented him from bonding and loving his wife at times as he should. And now the people he's worked with and talked to, you guys, like we see this. You see this with young people as well. They're hungry for authentic love, but sometimes they have been so trapped looking for it in all the wrong places. I mean, that's a song, isn't it? Looking for love in all the wrong places. I think that's almost the cry of this generation. Who is willing to speak up and offer the resources like Covenant Eyes and like so many other filtration softwares that help set you up for success?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's just it's just so important as parents, as people just living in this age, we have to, I don't want to take a reactionary standpoint, but we have to kind of stand in a defensive position about matters of sexuality, and we have to unplug from the cultural push. And we just have to say, no, I haven't changed. The world has changed around me, but the effects of this, the wages of this, have been death, and I don't want death for me or for my kids.
Absolutely. And Dr. Jordan Peterson, who has been huge in clinical psychology, I think a lot of people are really going to respect and see his work. He says, as you as a parent, you just don't have to send your kids to these classes. Like, keep them away from the classes that you disagree with. That is setting up a stand right then and there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Trending. This is Timory Millington. If you'd like to learn more about trending and my work, you can find me at timory.com. I travel around talking specifically about sexual morality, helping to educate not just high schoolers and not just young adults, but helping to educate parents and parishes to help them better articulate what the church is teaching about sex. And as you see in this conversation between Chris and I, science, anthropology, that's all a part of it. Like, our church is so scientific. It builds on human nature because the church is what brings forward human nature, what brings forth the destiny of human nature. Chris, you know, one of the things that I love before we change topics here is that, and I mentioned this before the break, is that Dr. Jordan Peterson talks about how, you know, if you're a parent, you don't have to send your kids to these comprehensive sex education classes. You don't have to send them to the classes where they're talking about gender ideology. It's kind of one of those moments where, and I'm just going to say it, in my words, suck it up, live with the consequences, and then that is going to continue to take a stand because you're not alone in disagreeing.
Yeah, you know, I think there's we have to empower parents. We have to make that decision to just say hell, comma, no.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's not just an exclamation we say, but like, hell, no, not in my house. You know, I was at the movies with my dad when I was like a middle schooler, and it was a PG-13 film. It started to get a little bit racy. And my dad stands up in the middle of the movie theater and goes, this is pornography. We're out of here. And it was the most mortifying moment for a 12-year-old, right? But absolutely. You know, that's masculinity, right? That's saying hell, comma, no. I'm not from me, not from my kids. We just won't have it. And yeah, to stand up against the school system or the state or whoever and say, no, you don't have the right to lead my children to hell. You just absolutely don't have that right.
Right. Okay. Going back to the context, I know you were young. If you remember your dad says, hell no. You guys go marching out. Yeah. You as a young boy, were you embarrassed at the fact that you couldn't look at that content?
I don't remember being embarrassed about the content, more just the, oh, my sweet, I hope no one sees this. You know what I mean? Like that. And of course, you know, middle schoolers are so concerned about what's within the social norms of, I don't really honestly remember.
Yeah, because I think that one of the things I see a lot with young boys is they're embarrassed to not be able to have access to this content. They're embarrassed to say no, as if it really like makes them less of a man by saying no or not being able to look at it.
Well, that's why they need a dad or men in their lives who are saying no on a regular basis, so they relate that to manhood, you know.
So there's a study that is talking right now more about why young people continue to leave the church. While we see that Christianity in many ways is growing, at the same time, young people are leaving the church in droves. There was a recent study released by St. Mary's Press of Minnesota collaborating with the Center of Applied Research. And this is just really interesting looking at what they have to say. And part of it is that today there is such a huge number of people who identify as nuns. Those are the people who don't identify with any religion whatsoever. But there's a big majority of Catholics who are leaving the church, some of them not identifying with things, some, you know, turning to evangelicalism. Most of them don't identify with anything. And, you know, you could go through this, but the vast majority just identify with no religion when they leave.
Right. Yeah. It's something we as a church really need to stop and say why, you know, and I think the problem is we stop and we say why, but, and we've, I've been in parish ministry for 16, 17 years, and this is not the first time I've heard this kind of study. We stop and say why, we have workshops, we do these things, and then we don't actually do anything about it, right? It's like everybody knows there's a problem, but at some point we have to say, well, then we have to take some steps to change things, or we have to sit down and we got to say, why are we doing it? I mean, the Pope just put out another survey to Catholics worldwide. I mean, my diocese was pushing this too, where they wanted the input of young people on their relationship with the church. And I'm excited to see what it says, but I kind of already know what it's going to say. Mm-hmm. Now we need to take some radical risks to say, how do we then change that? How do we combat that? How do we bring that back to them? I mean, and the study you're referring to talked about three different groups, right? The drifters, the dissenters, and the injured. Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's, gosh, three totally different things going on, but we need to then as a church say, okay, how do we respond to that? Mm-hmm. You know, and what's the biggest group amongst them? You know?
Right. And I think that, you know, you look at the injured, the people who think that what the church has taught has injured them because it convicts their lifestyle, or maybe it's someone who has, unfortunately, in warning for little ears, has suffered sexual abuse within the church. Like, you guys, we're fully willing to admit that there have been some wicked, wicked individuals in our church that need to be punished. And if you or someone you know has been harmed by a person in the church, especially through sexual abuse, like, know that that is not okay, and I'm sorry that that happened. And I want you to know that the doors to the church are open to you, and that there are good people willing to invite you in and who do care.
Yeah. And you look at those groups and who's the biggest group leaving, and my guess, and I didn't see this in the study, maybe you picked it up, is it's the drifters. Because mm-hmm. that's the group I run into the most, you know, and I think what was interesting is it says 35% of respondents no longer have any form of religion, 25%, 29% identified as non-Protestant Christians, mm-hmm. 14% as atheist, and 9% as Protestant. So what we're seeing is they're not leaving the Catholic Church to go to other flocks. They're just leaving, right? And I think it's that slow fade of, you know, I go on Sunday. And this goes back to that conversation of there's no community in it, right? We're destructured. We've taken that out of the experience. You go to Mass on Sunday. And I just read an article on this through American Magazine. They were saying that the seats on the end of the aisle are not for the regular Mass goers, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're going and you're kind of drifting and then you got to fight over people, no one smiles, no one welcomes you. There's no sense of I belong here. It's really easy just to drift away.
When I look at this, you know, one of the things that it talks about of what can we do pastorally to reach out to people, you know, Chris, it's things like know their name, care, like get involved in their lives. And I look at this and it's funny because I was just at a staff meeting in a secular business. And you know what they're reminding us of? Make sure you know the client's name. Because
right.
then we're going to be able to retain that client. Make sure, you know, promoting certain elements that are just part of being human, and the business world recognizes when you care about a person, they stick with you. They
right.
want to be involved. And this is something the mega churches are doing partially because they run as businesses.
Absolutely. I think structurally we face some challenges as Catholics, right? When we gather, it's the Sunday liturgy, right? Mm-hmm. And we want to have that sense of reverence in the church. You want to have people come in and have that time of holy silence. That doesn't lend itself to greeting and welcoming somebody and knowing their name. And so we sit in church. We typically sit in the same place. We look at the back of the same person's head. We watch their kids grow up, but we don't know that they're in struggling and their marriage is close to divorce. We have no way to reach into their lives and say, hey, can I babysit your kids so you can just take your wife on a date? Because structurally, we're just not set up for that. And so we have to look at those extra liturgical things. But the reality is most parishes are just overwhelmed. So to get to the extra liturgical things, they're just not even there because they're just trying to keep up with the sacramental life. It's a real challenge.
But I think that's where the responsibility of the lady, you in the pew of, hey, there's that person next to you. Just start by saying hello, not by avoiding eye contact.
Absolutely.
And screen out. And I'm guilty of this too. Like, I'm one where it hits Sunday. It's maybe my only day off during the week. You know, like maybe I have like a few hours off. And in my mind, I'm like, I just want to go to church and be with you, Lord. And I'm going to slide out the side door. And I know in many ways that that's wrong. But I think that at the same time, like, we've got to recognize that there are people in the pews who are maybe feeling the same way, but have no community whatsoever, and they're there alone.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. A radical hospitality needs to take place. It, on the laity, we have to get energized, but it has to come from a pastoral leadership. I mean, mm-hmm. it's got to be from the moment they get there. It's got to come through the homily. It's got to come through the person sitting next to them. And it has to come through at every point. They've got to feel like they're welcomed and they belong, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to do that in a way that then respects the reverence of the liturgy. Because like you said, we're not consumers. We're there to give ourselves to that. And so there's that tension between you're coming to someone who is in a consumer place mm-hmm. and trying to lead them to that place of, no, I'm offering my sacrifice in worship of the Father. You know, and that, there's a challenge and a tension. We've got to take some risks. We've got to be willing to make some mistakes, because right now everybody's playing it safe and we're just losing people in hordes.
Right. And there is a foundation, even if there's not a foundation of education for these young people who have left the church, even if there's not a foundation of love, even if there's not a foundation of them caring, you know, like all of these elements, the vast majority of these young people are willing to reevaluate what they're saying if they're provided with evidence. Unfortunately, and you know this, Chris, we live in an age of scientism. So unless you have some element of science along with an element of love to appeal to the love that they're searching for, if you don't bring those two into conversation, help them see that your faith is reasonable, but also supernatural, they're never going to hear you.
Right. No, I agree to that. I think we need to appeal to their search for the transcendent, but also be aware that we are under an assault from radical atheism, and we need to be able to speak to the reason and the rational as well.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us this week. It has been a joy to have you in studio, your perspective and insight on what we are facing with young people. Where can people find you?
ChrisMueller.co. You can see a couple different things there, the Weekly Word podcast, amongst other things. So check it out.
This is Trending. I'm Timory Millington. See you next week.